Welcome to the Mobile Game Dev Playbook. This podcast is brought to you in association with Game Refinery. Join us as we uncover the latest trends in mobile game design.
Hello and welcome to the Mobile Game Dev Playbook. It's the podcast that provides insights into what makes a great mobile game, what is and is not working for mobile game designers, and all the latest trends. I'm your host, John Jordan, and today we are going to be discussing the upcoming changes in iOS 14, notably those concerning user privacy and the IDFA, the identifier for advertisers. Sounds pretty dry, but it's actually going to impact game developers and publishers potentially quite substantially. So I'm going to be looking at that and also what solutions exist. And recently, last week, we just heard Apple's going to push this into early 2021. So originally, it was going to be mid-September. So we've got a bit more time than we thought, but it's still important for developers and publishers to be thinking about this now because it is going to happen. So joining me to discuss this is Lauri Henkkinen, who's the head of product at Game Refinery. How are things going?
Hi, John. Things are great. I'm happy to be here. This is actually my first podcast, so really looking forward to it.
Good, good. Excellent. So do you want to give us a bit of an explanation about what you do as head of product?
Yeah, sure. So, I think my main responsibility is to ensure that we deliver the best product possible to our customers. And of course, understand the market as well as possible. I've been responsible for our SaaS product for a little bit over 4 years now. And more recently, I've been working on the data enrichment product as well that we just recently launched.
Yes, and that, we can talk about that further in the podcast. Pretty important in this kind of context. And our expert guest, not that Lauri is not an expert, but our particular expert guest in terms of advertising is Alistair Presney, who's a senior product manager at AdConnolly, one of the largest mobile ad platforms in the world with more than 1.5 billion monthly users. How are things going, Alistair?
It's going well, thanks. It's good to have an extra 3 months to work through these things.
Yeah, absolutely. So to set the scene, we've been kind of throwing around some acronyms already, which is always a bit dangerous, I think. If you could kind of give us a kind of a non-technical overview into kind of what the IDFA actually is and what is happening to it in iOS 14, so we can kind of like have a level playing field for the discussion, which is going to get a bit more technical. But let's start simple.
Sure. So let's start with why. Apple cares a lot about privacy because the users of Apple devices care a lot about privacy. And so what they've done is they've actually made a lot of privacy changes in iOS 14. And there's two or three changes that are really significant for the advertising industry. The first one is that there's this thing called a device identifier. And think of it as a serial number that's associated with your device. And it goes everywhere you go. The first thing that Apple's done is they've made it so that users have to opt in to sharing this device ID. If the device ID isn't shared, then it's really difficult for advertisers to track the users, these users across apps and websites, and it makes it a lot harder to do things like, analytics or measurement or targeting with advertising or even things like advertising measurement. So that's the first thing that Apple did. The second thing that Apple did was they introduced an attribution system, an ad measurement system called SK Ad Network, which allows ad measurements to take place when IDFA is not available. So Apple is saying, hey guys, we're not going to let you track users if they don't want to be tracked, but we're still going to let you measure the success of your advertising campaigns if the users are not trackable.
Good, excellent. That's a very good overview. One thing just to kind of point out, obviously, this is a big change that Apple has made, but this is kind of part, certainly, as you mentioned, for Apple, a long-term plan for Apple to be a kind of privacy-based platform. And more generally, we are seeing across all kind of nationalities and across most kind of companies who are in this kind of space, we are seeing more privacy anyway. So it's not just Apple has kind of pulled this one out of the hat. This is kind of Google and similar companies are kind of moving in the same direction. Is that broadly correct?
I think the best way to kind of express that or kind of see that change which is happening is by looking at the privacy legislation that's come out in various countries. So In Europe, we have GDPR. In California, we have CCPA. There's other states that are considering their own privacy laws. There's one that just came out in Thailand. Australia is also looking at one too. So it's becoming much more of a global thing.
Yeah. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, which could be the case, but as far as I understand it, at the moment in iOS 13, you could, if you went into the settings, you could opt out of tracking across all apps, you know, as a kind of universal kind of statement, so you couldn't be tracked. And with the iOS 14, the interesting kind of switch is when you download an app now, you'll be asked, there'll be a pop-up on a per-app basis whether you want to be tracked or not. So in some ways, it's kind of a more kind of granulated decision, but I guess we assume that most users, when they get a pop-up saying, do you want to be tracked, are going to say no. So that's kind of the why we're so interested in this particular change. Is that correct?
That's right. So today, there's about 30% of users who don't let their device identifier be shared today. And they use an option in their settings that exist already and to do that. And so what's going to happen is this option is going to be made a lot more obvious and a lot more available to any user that downloads an app and installs an app for the first time. So as opposed to users navigating to an option that's a little more hidden, you have something that's going to pop up right in front of you. So we expect that the number of users or the percentage of users who are going to say, yes, I agree to tracking is going to be, it's going to be more. It's going to be, right now it's 30%. It could be more than 30% in the future.
Yeah, it's been some interesting stats that could be. I don't know how well organized these stats are, or whether they're kind of like gut instincts. But people seem to be saying like 70, 80, 90% of people are going to opt out now. And it seems like even if it's a smaller number, because you just lose the granularity across what's going on over the entire ecosystem, the whole thing falls apart. Laurie, are you someone who opts in? How focused are you on privacy at the moment? Or maybe you're using Android, so maybe it doesn't affect you.
I know I'm on iPhone, but well, so far I really haven't cared. But maybe I think I like to get targeted if that helps me to get better games. So yeah. I'm the person who likes to get ads delivered as sharp as possible.
It is an interesting sort of thing, isn't it? Because I guess a lot of this kind of privacy stuff is gets confused with kind of like maybe kind of hacking or that sort of stuff. Where privacy is actually, as far as I understand, the IDFA isn't tracking you as an individual. It doesn't know your name and where you live. It just gives an anonymous kind of tracker to you, so they can tell what that device is doing. So I'm kind of with you, but maybe we're kind of a losing breed. That it's nice to get adverts that are kind of related to things you're interested in, rather than adverts for things that you're not interested in. Things are changing, and I guess we will have the chance to opt in now on a per app basis. So some apps we might not want to be tracked in, and some apps we might be very, very happy with. Okay. So let's move on. You've mentioned a little bit about the SK Ad Network, which is Apple's kind of proprietary ad solution, or effectively will now be replacing IDFA. So, Alice, can you say a little bit, without getting too technical, how is this different, and what kind of functionality are we losing in this new kind of system that Apple is effectively asking everyone to use?
So I think it's important to note that I don't think it's necessarily different from what we've seen in the past. So before the IDFA existed, there was a different identifier that was used called a UUID. And Apple replaced that with the IDFA a few years ago. And the main reason they replaced the UUID with the IDFA is because the IDFA gave the users the ability to turn on or turn off whether or not it was going to be exposed. And now what's happened is Apple's just taken that option to turn on and turn off whether or not that identifier has been exposed, and they've made it significantly more obvious. So we're talking about a gradual shift over a long period of time that's manifested in a change today where there's a pop-up that exists for the IDFA. So this is something that's been a long time coming.
Although you know, we've kind of pushed it out a few months, we've seen some quite kind of apocalyptic headlines written around this. Obviously we don't know exactly how what's going to roll out and how what the kind of potential solutions that are going to come into place are, but do you think potentially it will kind of completely disrupt is a terrible word, will it completely tank kind of UA user acquisition for mobile game developers, or is there more nuance in there, or it'll be kind of like a journalist kind of slightly making up headlines? We never do that, really. But
performance advertising is about data-driven decision-making when you're doing your optimizations. And so when you're tracking individual users and the ability to track individual users goes away, then the data that you have at your disposal for making those campaign optimizations is no longer available as well. So advertising, if you're a performance advertiser, someone who tries to get their app installed on a user's device, for example, they're going to have to make an adjustment, right? With the absence of specific user-level targeting, an advertiser is no longer going to be able to snipe, so to speak, specific users that they're going after. They will, however, still be able to target specific users in a contextual way or on a more broad basis. So they'll still be able to do advertising. It's just they're not going to be able to target those individual users that they know are going to provide a certain value to their app.
Mm. So the kind of targeting can they do? Will they be able to kind of look at other kind of apps or games that I'm playing? How will that kind of work? Or will there just be, you know, it'll just be kind of everyone will get Pepsi ads sort of thing, that kind of level of advertising?
So contextual targeting is anything that doesn't involve an individual user or device. So it could be things like which country the user's in, what game they're playing, what operating system they're running, or, you know, kind of what device they're on in general, as opposed to the specific device. They can say things like, or they can identify things like, oh, I'm on an iPhone 10, but I don't know which iPhone 10 this is. Yeah. Those sorts of contextual targeting options have always been made available, and those will continue to be made available into the future.
Okay. Laurie, you mentioned in your introduction, one of the things you've been working on recently is this the data enrichment product. So this actually is interesting in the sense that it's kind of a game refinery has been very focused on a specific kind of way of looking at or kind of quantifying kind of mobile games and who likes them. That's been more a game design sort of tool. So game developers have used your data to kind of see what kind of features and what things they should be doing in their games, or maybe not what they should be doing, but looking at what their competitors are doing sort of thing. So it's kind of a game design tool. This new kind of data enrichment is more in the advertising kind of sphere. So what was the kind of vision behind that? And how do you think it plays into this new kind of advertising ecosystem, which is less focused or is less targeted on the individual ID of users, but maybe more interested in kind of what broadly what games people are playing?
Yeah. So, the main idea is still the same as we've done previously. So we've been deconstructing games and trying to get different types of features out of there, such as subgenre defining features. And we've also expanded to motivations and demographics, what's the visual style. So kind of try to paint as good of a picture of the game as possible. Previously, we've been only doing that manually, but more recently, we've been developing machine learning models that are able to automate this data. And we're now able to cover basically every game in App Store and Google Play. And how the contextual targeting ties to this is basically, well, first of all, contextual targeting per se isn't new, but it hasn't been kind of used that much in mobile because of the performance targeting and ability to target individual users. But what we are now trying to kind of chip in is that we're able to tell you more about the game, and the publisher game, the publisher ID is still passed even in the SKAd network. So we can kind of inject some data into that. And the idea there is that we can match advertisers with the most suitable publishers. And the kind of hypothesis there is that, well, if I'm, for example, shown a game that is similar to game that I'm playing, it could be in terms of subgenre, or maybe the motivations are the same, or maybe the kind of average demographics is the same who are playing the game. So I'm more likely to, first of all, maybe install that game, but also play that game more, maybe even monetize, look ads, and so forth. So just trying to kind of narrow the gap and give transparency to the apps where you're advertising in, and also give the tools to both the game developers and to ad networks, give them the data about the advertisers and publishers for themselves to do the analysis and optimization when it comes to kind of contextual targeting.
Mm-hmm. So I guess at the highest level, it would be something like I'm playing a some sort of match-free puzzle game. So an obvious thing would be to give me an advert for another match-free puzzle game. I guess that's so obvious that you're actually, I mean, that would be something within your kind of framework, but it's so obvious that doesn't make any sense. You're not really enriching any data to do something like that. So how kind of surprising could be the adverts that are being supplied to someone playing a game? Because I guess you're talking about, you know, when it comes to gamer motivations, that is potentially very different to genre or subgenre. So could it be the case that someone's playing a match-free game and for some reason they get an advert for a hardcore strategy game and you somehow have found there's like an audience affinity between those things? Is that possible? Is that likely?
Well, if you look at the individual users, then it's kind of unlikely. But when you look at the aggregates of users, then it's actually likely that we are able to kind of give you recommendations for the apps that would work better as kind of publisher ads for your own game.
And I guess you've kind of built how many data points per game is it now that you're collecting?
So currently we have a little bit over 700 data points. And of course, as you mentioned, so if you're looking only at match-3 games, that's your kind of obvious answer. And you know the top match-3 games that you would like to go for. But usually they are blacklisting the biggest competitors if they are even showing ads. Mm-hmm. So the publishers might be elsewhere. And the thing is that there are tens of thousands of games that are kind of potential publishers. So what we try to do is we try to use different signals in the data set, whether it's a subgenre, motivations, demographics, or visual style, and come up with a list of games that you could advertise in. And as you said, they can vary a lot. So it could be so that a match-3 player is playing an RPG game, but it could be that there are actually motivations that are shared among the games. And what we've been trying to do is that we actually use either the game developers or the ad network's actual performance data to use that as a kind of predictor. And we've been modeling against that. So we then know what types of games have historically worked and then use the whole of metadata to then kind of optimize towards that.
Yeah. So you have your kind of theoretical kind of view on what should work, and then you fine tune that with the feedback you get from running all these ads, and then that kind of, you know, the combination of the two things is what gives you the kind of the secret sauce, the finesse to kind of hopefully maximize the advertising, the performance advertising.
Yeah, exactly. And there's of course the kind of third second part of the equation, which is the creatives. So we also have models for that. So we're able to pull metadata out of the creatives, which kind of completes the trio. So finding the fit between the advertiser, creative, and then the publisher game. Mm. And we've seen that there's quite a big correlation between the fit and then the quality of traffic. Mm.
So Alistair, this is kind of contextual kind of targeting. Is this something you think has promise, particularly in this kind of situation where we're focusing less on individuals?
Absolutely. So one of the first things that happened when Apple announced the IDFA changes was a lot of partners that AdColony works with came to us and said, "Hey, what other contextual features can you provide so that we can do different sorts of targeting?" So you know, having these sorts of options available, especially the, you know, unique kind of app analysis, you know, when it's done manually, like the way that Game Refiner was doing initially, and being able to scale that, it's pretty great. Having those options available for contextual targeting in tomorrow's world of advertising is going to be very useful. You know, at the least, advertisers are going to test it out and, you know, see if there's any strong correlation. And then, you know, if there is a correlation, then advertisers will, you know, define bidding strategies around it. So, right now, just, you know, having the ability to go explore new contextual targeting features is something I would encourage any advertiser to do in the absence of user level targeting.
Mm. And more generally, what other approaches are people kind of experimenting with to try and kind of get back this granularity that they had previously?
So you removing the IDFA caused some really fundamental features in ad targeting to go away. So for example, without an IDFA, it's very difficult to do frequency capping. So just limiting the number of ads you would show a user. Because if you don't know which device you've shown an ad to, then you can't keep a record of the history of ads that you've shown to that user. Advertising is basically doing a full restart. And so, frequency capping has gone away, but also, things that are more kind of targeting based, like segments, targeting specific user segments, a list of device IDs is still going to be there, but the size of the list is going to be considerably smaller because you'll have less IDFAs available to generate those lists. Another thing that's not going to be feasible as much is anti-targeting using suppression lists. So a suppression list is very similar to a segment where you generate a list of device IDs and you say, I don't want to target those devices. And so when you're advertising an app campaign, it's one of the things that a suppression list is used for is listing out the users who have already installed your app, because in that case you don't want to advertise those users again. That's also going to be severely diminished with having less IDFA availability, and ultimately what this means is that there could be some implications for the efficiency of campaigns, and so campaigns are going to have to find new ways to be efficient to adjust for this. And that's where kind of contextual targeting comes in and fills the gap. So it's not a one-to-one replacement of these features. These features are going away, and you'll be able to do it for the percentage of users that do opt in. But in order to kind of maintain efficiency, you have to look in other areas. And so contextual is the best place to go.
So if I've understood you correctly there, there's quite a lot of games that have in-app purchases and advertising, and one of the things might be spend $5 and we'll buy something and we'll switch off advertising. That kind of has gone away now because they won't know who I am to switch off my advertising. Is that right?
So I'm going to relay your question back to you to make sure I understand it. So the question was whether it's going to be possible to track a user after they made a purchase within an app.
Yeah.
So that would be possible for within a specific publisher or developer, because what Apple's done is they've exposed an identifier called an IDFV, and that allows publishers and developers to have a serial number that they can use to track that user within their own games. But that serial number, that identifier is going to change from one game to another. So you cannot track that user's purchase history from one developer to another developer. The IDFA could do that. So your publisher developers are still going to be able to measure things like LTV and things like that. But they're not going to be able to do it across multiple apps and websites unless the user opts in.
Yeah. And do you think that we'll start to see not just game developers, but kind of companies, app companies in general, in some ways trying to incentivize people or try and kind of explain to them in broad terms why they think they should be opting in, or would Apple allow them to do that? They're not very keen on incentivized actions in general.
It's possible. So we've seen something similar in the web space already. There are cookie walls that exist on browser. And I think the big question mark right now is whether or not that's going to be permissible, not just by Apple, but also by various legal authorities in Europe and the US who are building and enforcing these privacy laws. If basically you have to clear two hurdles now, you have to clear both Apple and legal authorities. And so if you're able to clear both hurdles, then I can see incentivized opt-in as a way for publishers to get a higher percentage of users to opt-in, provided that they have a strong value proposition for their users.
Laurie, would that be something you would consider kind of opting in? Do you think kind of gamers, taking yourself as a mobile gamer, do you think that's something if they were kind of given kind of an argument or the facts for why it's good that you could kind of see maybe a slight kind of reversal of consumer behavior towards adopting opt-in, at least for apps and products that they're really interested in? Because obviously we kind of have this, the things we really like, we're kind of fans of, and we kind of kind of feel like we want to help the developer, and for other things we might have a very different attitude.
Yeah, I think at least for me it's about transparency, and Alastair mentioned about the cookie walls, and I just pictured a few of them that I saw today, and I usually kind of browse through them, and if they make it sound reasonable, and if it's not too vague, I usually just go for it. And of course, it depends on the site as well. So I would assume that would be the same thing with apps. So it depends from app to app, but also kind of how they would be using it and how would they communicate to me. So yeah, I would be ready to opt in if I feel fine with it. Otherwise, I'd opt out probably.
So we've been talking about some of the kind of the nuts and bolts of what's going away and what potentially is coming. I guess that can still seem, I think, to lots of people very abstract. And I guess that's because it's kind of hard to understand how integrated kind of mobile advertising is to the mobile games industry. It seems like obviously most of the revenue is driven by in-app purchases. There's a lot of money from ads, but it's kind of it's small compared to in-app purchases. And I think it's kind of worth maybe setting out kind of the knock-on effects, I guess, of what we think is going to happen with Apple. And Alistair, you can I'll come to you and you can tell me if I'm wrong. But it seems to me that a lot of developers, you know, that they like this ad tracker because they can, you know, find anonymous individuals and they can know exactly kind of what those people have done, if they're kind of big spenders or if they kind of really into a certain type of game. And because they know that, that means that they can, when they're doing their advertising, they're really interested in getting those people to play their games. And so they can bid high, you know, they will bid higher amounts for someone who they know has been playing certain types of games and has spent a certain amount of money and has been in these games for a certain period of time, because they know that they can generate a return on that. They've built those kind of models. And that also means that the people who have games that are showing advertising, you know, obviously they get, you know, the share of that advertising that's being spent by the developer who wants to attract people to download his game goes, you know, some of that goes to the developer who's shown the ad. So you have, in a sense, advertising has become so big because it's win-win, because the advertisers can find potentially quite a small group of people who are really interested in their Japanese RPG who live in Norway. If they wanted to find those people, they could, it's probably 10 of them or something, they could find them and advertise to them and make money from them. And the people who are showing the adverts would also get that money. Now that's going to go away. So particularly on one end, you may see a lot of developers who were doing quite well in terms of the advertising money they made. Now no longer, you know, they might see a quite significant drop off in advertising revenue. Is that right? And do we have any idea quite how big a drop they could be kind of impacted by?
Well, it's really hard to make, you know, firm projections at this point. So we, as you said, we do know that, you know, user level targeting is largely going to go away. And so, to use an analogy, the toolkit an advertiser is going to use is going to switch from kind of a very accurate, you know, kind of sniper rifle to go after very specific users to more of the advertisers on a lake somewhere fishing for users, and it might be quite dark, so you don't exactly know where those users are. So, you know, as opposed to, you know, making your targeting as accurate as possible, it's now more about, you know, making sure you're on, you know, fishing in the lake at the right time of day, or you're using the right kind of lure. So it's more, again, it's much more about contextual targeting. Now, we don't know how advertisers are going to set up their campaigns around contextual targeting because they haven't done it yet. And we know that, you know, advertising revenue flows from the advertisers to the publishers. So it's really hard to make any projections because we don't know how advertisers are going to, you know, bid using their new tool set that they're going to have. We don't know what their tool set's going to be yet. And therefore, we don't know what, you know, publisher revenue is going to look like either.
So you're not I guess you can't kind of publicly comment. I was going to see if you get any kind of percentage figure because that's what we like to see. Revenue still going to be down by 50%. Obviously, that's not very nuanced. Okay.
There's just no data that we can use to make an accurate prediction. Unfortunately. Yeah.
But we do, the reason that we kind of doing this podcast and people have been writing about this is we do expect it to be, you know, fairly substantial. I think, do we? We don't expect it to be like a 5% drop. No, we can't tell, it's a prediction, but we expect it to be, you know, for some, and perhaps some of the smaller developers are going to be kind of more here. I don't know.
Yeah. So when advertisers are able to target specific users, they are able to kind of, you know, make bids that are, you know, significantly higher for those specific users that are high value. And so something like that might not be possible anymore. And as a result, we might see lower bids across the board if the upper percentile bids are no longer possible. However, maybe those users still opt in. We don't know. So it's difficult to really, you know, make guesses based off of that. Now, basically, all the users are treated in aggregate. So whatever, whatever targeting rules that you create contextually when you're targeting these users, the price that you set for acquiring those users, the cost per install, is going to be based off the aggregate of all those users that are within that group, as opposed to kind of having a specific bid for, you know, segments of that group or something like that, where it's much easier to go and do price differentiation. So because there's less price differentiation and because we're treating things as aggregates, we might see different pricing behavior. But if everything in aggregate results in kind of a very similar average bid, then we may not see a drop in advertising revenue. But again, like, it's very difficult for us to make these projections without, you know, actually seeing some data first. And for that, we need the advertisers to go in and kind of build campaigns for this new world, in contextual signals.
I can see it's more complicated, of course, than I'm suggesting, which is why you're the expert and I'm not. I guess broadly we are kind of everyone's kind of happy that Apple has pushed it into next year. They've been a bit unclear. They just said kind of early 2021. Do we think there's any potential that they may be kind of dialing back on to some degree on what they're up to, or is this? Yeah, there's lots of other things going on with Apple's kind of world at the moment. There's the whole Epic thing and the EU and stuff like that. Do we just think they just kind of pushed that away for a little bit because it's easy at the moment, rather than there's going to be any substantial rethinking of what they're up to?
I don't think there's going to be any substantial rethinking of what they're up to, because again, you know, before the IDFA, there was a UUID, and they implemented some privacy features and replaced the UUID at the IDFA. They've implemented privacy features on Safari, and now they've just moved on to kind of making some changes to the IDFA. So we're talking about a long-term, you know, privacy-focused shift in the industry that's really started with Apple. And I don't expect that to change anytime soon. I think what's happened in this case is, developers and advertisers just simply need more time to work through what they need to do to adjust. And Apple is, Apple has decided to give us more time because that's good for the overall ecosystem. The last thing Apple wants is for app developers to, have difficulty, updating their products for the App Store, because then there won't be any apps in the App Store. So, they're trying to make sure that the ecosystem is able to transition in a way that, that maintains continuity, which I think is a good thing.
Mm, yeah, that's positive. Okay, so time to wrap up now. Advice for developers and other people in the ecosystem. What should they be doing in these few months of grace that they have been magically granted?
It's very important to test. So what Apple's essentially done is they said, hey, you still have to make these changes. You just have a little more time to make these changes. And you're going to be able to release your app on iOS 14, and we're not going to enforce these changes that are going to be made for a few months. So as a developer, as Ad Colony, as a product manager at Ad Colony, I would encourage all of our developers to test what this new world looks like. You know, take a small percentage of your devices and request the Apple pop-up, see how your BI systems behave, see how your ad targeting behaves, and your LTV analysis behaves when you do this. And then also when you're doing advertising, set up a few campaigns that run on SK Ad Network. There's quite a lot of limitations with SK Ad Network that you need to be aware of. And it's better to be, to plan ahead for when enforcement does come, so that you are prepared. So just to give an example of the limitations, when you're setting up campaigns, you can only use up to 100 campaign IDs. And think of a campaign ID as some kind of a distinguishable way of targeting certain supply. So, for example, if I am targeting an app as an advertiser with 100 campaign IDs, I can only split my campaign up to 100 distinct ways and still be able to measure. So, if you're mixing in different creatives, or you have different prices by different countries, or different prices by different device tiers, you're going to get to 100 campaigns very quickly. And so, advertisers should start thinking about that ahead of time, and start planning ahead, restructuring their campaigns. And actually, now that Apple's given us a few months where there's going to be apps that do request a pop-up and apps that don't request a pop-up, and Apple's going to let both kinds of apps exist. You have the ability to test, and you have the ability to make sure that you're prepared for 2021.
Excellent advice. Thank you very much for that. Thank you, Laurie, for being our expert from Game Refinery.
Thanks. My pleasure. And basically, from my point of view, what I've been talking to game companies, a lot of them seem to be all over the place. So what I'd say to them is, first of all, don't panic. The change will come, but it's the same for everyone. And as Alastair said, test all the things and just be kind of open-minded about the kind of shift in the mindset to the new world. And things will work out.
That's very calm advice. Don't panic. Yes, that's good. Yeah. Somewhere between don't panic and test, you'll find your nirvana. Thank you very much for that, Laurie. Thank you very much for your time, Alastair.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you very much, listeners, for listening. That's our time up for today. Just a reminder that we are doing podcasts every month about what's going on in the ever-changing world of mobile games. So please do find us on your podcast provider of choice if you're not already subscribed. We have a whole backlog now of episodes covering a whole range of stuff. So if you come across us for the first time, please check out what we've been up to. And if you like us, give us some feedback on your podcast platform of choice. Always good to get some reviews. Thank you very much for listening to this one, and come back next time.